My name's Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
Moncrief on News Talk.
A photograph of Oscar Wilde on his deathbed has just sold at auction in London for over 300,000 euro, 10 times the guide price. The last few days, indeed, the last few years of Wilde's life were far from pleasant. He was only 46 when he passed away. Martin Burns is director of Oscar Wilde House on Merrion Square. Good afternoon, Martin.
Good afternoon.
Things that belonged or things that are connected to Oscar Wilde seem to be at a premium now.
Yeah.
Was that always the case?
No. In the last, his sort of, his stock is rising exponentially every year. If you've got something at home, it's going to be worth 10 times, 20 times what it was when you first bought it. This has really happened over the last 30 years. His reputation is getting stronger and stronger across the globe.
Yeah, and is that down to any particular set of factors?
I think the mythology of who Wilde was, the fact that he's the kind of literary icon, he's a gay icon, he's a revolutionary character. He was a philosopher, playwright, children's author, novelist. He's very varied in his output.
Yeah. And take us, if after he was released from Reading Jail, those 3 years, and when he went to France, it was pretty much the case. Was he friendless? Would it be too much to say that?
No, not at all. First of all, he moved to Dieppe, and then he got sort of hassled by reporters from the Daily Mail newspaper. And
wow, they were doing it even then.
Yeah, and then he moved on up the coast to a place called Berneval-sur-Lay, and he was living a quiet life under an assumed name. He called himself Sebastian Melmoth. He couldn't be Oscar Wilde anymore. He'd have been attacked in the street, but in France they kind of slightly welcomed him with open arms because the British were horrible to him, so of course the French were nice to him. And he was a kind of literary hero. When the picture of Dorian Gray came out, André Gide, the French writer, and all the Parisian literati just called it, the greatest work of the fin de siècle movement. He was kind of the new Apollo, etc., they called him. So he's in Normandy, and he writes the last thing he ever wrote. He wrote The Ballad of Reading Jail. Mm. And then he was writing to his wife. He had two sons, and he wanted to see his sons. He hadn't seen them from when they... since he got out of prison, and there was a sort of miscommunication, and the sons were meant to show up and they didn't, and Oscar was really angry. And then who shows up at that very moment? Lord Alfred Douglas Bosie, his former lover, the guy who his relationship with it sort of led to Oscar Wilde, ended up in court. And Oscar took Bosie back, and when he took him back, his wife was devastated, all his friends were devastated. So those two guys head off to Naples for a kind of summer of... young men and alcohol. Mm. But Bosie was a famous, today you'd say he had anger management issues. They fought the whole time. And then when the money runs out, Bosie kind of leaves him in a villa in Naples. And then Oscar returns to Paris, and he moves into a little hotel in the Hotel d'Alsace, near, it's just across the Seine from the Louvre. And he spends the last 18 months in this hotel, kind of, he's a creature of habit. He's drinking a lot of alcohol. He's got an abscess in his ear, which is getting worse, and he's self-medicating. And I've been to that hotel, and I've been to the room in which they claim he spent the last sort of few years of his life. And on the wall is a bill, and they claim that Oscar was drinking about 3 litres of Courvoisier brandy a week before he starts drinking. So every day he's...
That's a warm-up.
Yeah. So every evening he crosses the Seine, he goes to the Café de la Régence, he has an apéritif, and then he goes to the Moulin Rouge, and he's there with Toulouse-Lautrec, who's a buddy of his, and they're drinking absinthe. every night, heavy drinking. Another one of their friends is Eric Satie, the composer. They were heavy boozers, and Oscar's got this ear problem, which is getting worse, and the booze isn't helping it. So he kind of deteriorates, and he ends up having to have an operation on his ear. He had two operations on his ear, actually, in his hotel room. Horrible experiences.
Yeah.
So he's, but I mean, it wasn't, he's impoverished, but it wasn't all misery. There's a lot of joy, and you know, he's
Who was funding this? Had he run out of money at that stage?
He'd run out of money, but he was kind of funding it himself by begging from people. You know, one of his friends, Frank Harris, who was from Galway, he was a journalist and a you know, hotel owner, etc. And Frank Harris had bought a scenario of a new Wilde play of Oscar. Because Oscar couldn't bring himself to write anything himself, so he sold a scenario for £100 to Frank Harris. Frank Harris then puts the play on, it was called Mr. and Mrs. Daventry, and all these people come out of the woodwork. Say to Frank Harris, hang on a second, we bought that scenario off Oscar Wilde for £100. Why are you putting it on? That is ours. So
Frank Harris actually fleshed out the play, written a play?
Yeah, he wrote it. Oscar was meant to write the first part of it, but he didn't get around to it. So Frank did it himself, and then Oscar was kind of annoyed. But anyway, all these people came out of the woodwork and said to Frank Harris, that is our play. So Frank goes back to Paris, and he takes Oscar out to dinner, and he says, what the hell did you sell me that scenario for when, you know, you sold it to other people? And instead of apologising, Oscar says, well, why did you put the play on? I could have kept that scam going for years. You know, I could have kept £100 of anybody I met. So he was completely unrepentant and a bad boy in the end.
Yeah. And why do you think he couldn't write? Was he physically incapable of writing?
I think prison had killed whatever it was in him. You know, once he wrote the Ballad of Reading Gaol, because his plays were, you know, his plays were kind of jovial takes on society, so he wasn't going to do that. And he'd done the fairy tales, and he'd written a novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray, so he couldn't really write about the decadent thing anymore. That was dead, and his reputation was in the mud. So I think he just, and also alcohol, his alcohol consumption's going through the roof, so people can't really, you know, he could barely function, I think, towards the end.
Yeah, and during that period, was he corresponding with anyone?
Yeah, he was writing to everybody. He's begging letters off everybody, begging money off everybody, pretending to be more broke than he was. But the hotel owner was very nice to him. The hotel owner, Jean du Poirier, let him stay for long periods of time without paying any of his bills. And Oscar gets up to, at one point, he owes £400, which is really stressing him out. £400 is about 60 grand in today's money.
Yeah.
So he owed 20 grand to the guy who owned the hotel, and he owned pharmacy bills, and he had to pay for those operations. And, you know, this is all getting to him. But, you know, Oscar being Oscar, some of his best quotes come from this period. He says, I'm dying beyond my means. And then he's lying in bed, and that famous one, the wallpaper and I are fighting a duel to the death. One of us has to go. Mm. And of course, it's Oscar.
Yeah. And the illness, how long was he in the bed for, so to speak, before he actually died?
Well, I'd say the last, it was more like a week when he did get up when he was really sick, and he went for a drive around the Bois de Boulogne, but he kept stopping the carriage and getting out at cafes and drinking absinthe. And the doctors had warned him, do not drink this lethal potion, you know, you're trying to get you better. And then one night he went for a walk with his very unsteady on his feet to a cafe, and again drinks absinthe. And unsurprisingly, he's in bed the next day, unable to get out of bed. But then, you know, there's a turn for the worst, and this infection in his ear gets into the outer ear and then into the brain, and, you know, and then doctors diagnose meningitis. So he's kind of drifting in and out of consciousness for the last few days of his life.
When did they call a priest?
They called a priest a couple of days before he died. So around the 27th of November, they went and they got Father Cuthbert Dunn, who was a Dubliner. He was from Dublin, but he was looking after St. Joseph's Church near the Arc de Triomphe. So Robbie Ross, Oscar's friend, goes and gets him. And he arrives and says to Oscar, you know, first of all, Oscar was unconscious, and he waited till Oscar was conscious, and he said, do you want to enter the church? And Oscar raised his hand, and then...
And he converted.
Dunn receives him into the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And then a few days later, when Oscar died, he carried out the last rites.
Yeah. It was easy to convert then in those days. Probably easier than it is now, I would have thought.
Yeah.
Why do you think he didn't convert sooner? He always seemed to have an interest in Catholicism.
Well, he said that Catholicism went, you know, he loved Catholicism. He liked the medieval aspect of it, you know, the sort of the robes and the incense and the benediction. It was very, you know, it's a very... aesthetic and ethereal experience. But he said that, Catholicism in the end went against his two great loves, and that was money and ambition. So that's why he never converts. But he's always playing around with the idea. When he's at Trinity, he was hanging out with the Jesuits, talking to them about converting. When he's at Oxford, he's hanging out with a guy called Hunter Blair, who was a convert. He goes to see some cardinals, Cardinal Manning, giving talks in London. And his father, even when he was at Trinity, his father said to him, you know, do not become a Catholic. It's not because of any kind of religious bigotry. It was because of, you know, Catholics were second-class citizens back then. And, you know, the Protestant ascendancy ruled the country. So you were kind of condemning yourself to a less powerful place in society if you became Catholic. So his father forbade it.
Yeah. After he converted then, was he given Catholic last rites, and did he make a last confession?
No, he was.
It would be a very un-Oscar Wilde thing to do.
The priest was whispering stuff in his ear, and the priest said that he was kind of trying to speak, and he was kind of trying to repeat it. But the priest was absolutely convinced that Oscar was totally... because this priest, Father Dunn, he lived for another 50 years. I mean, and he... He refused to talk about it, but in 1945, when somebody came out with a scurrilous pamphlet about Wilde's death, they said that it was based on Frank Harris's book, and they said that when Oscar ceased to breathe, that all this, you know, his body kind of exploded. And this priest in 1945 saw this as an indication of his degeneracy, so he brought out this pamphlet, and that's when Dunn spoke out. He went, no, this did not happen, this is how it happened, and that's the first time he spoke about it.
Yeah. Now, at the same time, Wilde's body didn't explode, clearly, but it was filled with pus. It wasn't pleasant at all.
No, it was not pleasant at all. It was, but, you know... it's death, so...
Yeah, which is never pleasant.
No.
Yes. Was there any sign in the correspondence in that last year of his life that he had any regrets?
No, Oscar Wilde wasn't the kind of regrets type of guy.
Yeah.
His probably only regret was that he didn't enjoy himself more, and he enjoyed himself as much as possible. He had a condition, he just couldn't hold on to money. Yeah. Every time he gets money, he blows it, and then he goes, why am I broke? And then he writes another play, and then he blows that money. And he writes another play, and he blows that. I mean, the level of spending is off the charts. You know, he moved, at the height of his powers, he moved Bosie Douglas's lover into the Savoy Hotel, which was just newly opened, and it was kind of the fanciest hotel in town. And they spent 2 months in there, and in a two-month period, on room service alone, in today's money, Oscar Wilde spent about €200,000 on champagne and caviar and whatever.
Indeed. Well, after he had died... in London, in England, how was his death reported?
Well, the Times of London were very sort of scathing about him. They said, you know, what a waste of a talent and waste of his life. And homosexuality in those days was like seen as an illness, and they thought that he was sick in the head, and you know, his name was forever tainted. And at the time, people were saying that the Wilde name is going to be cursed for 1,000 years. You know, it's.
Yeah. That's extraordinary. And, you know, thankfully it has changed more than a bit. Martin, thanks a million for coming to tell us about that. That was Martin Burns, our director of the Oscar Wilde House on Merrion Square.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.